is up, Daddy Gang. It is your founding father, Alex Cooper, with Call Her Daddy.
Misha Barton, welcome to Call Her Daddy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm so happy we're finally doing this.
I know.
We've like wanted to do this for so long and our schedules have been shit and we're finally here. We're on the couch. We're cozy. We're ready to go.
We're doing it.
So Daddy Gang, we're currently in New York, which is where you grew up and kind of like where you really, I feel like, got your start. Do you plan on staying here long term? Like, is New York it for you?
I love New York. I mean, I just feel more at home here. This last year, like since we first started talking, like I've been spending a lot of time in London and Europe again. But like, I get that kind of, those kind of vibes when I'm in New York and I get the culture and I, you know, I started in the theater. I love being able to like go to the theater all the time and like hang out in the cute little bookshops. And I love like the village where I live. It's romantic and cute. And,
it is. It's magical. I used to live here and like every time I come back, I'm like,
you're an East Coast girl, right?
Yeah, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
But you were born in London or
Yes,
England?
Yeah. No, okay. I was born in London and then we moved to New York when I was 5 and a half. So I actually had like a little British accent and the whole thing when I was a kid and had to lose it. I got teased mercilessly in school.
Was that actually a good thing sometimes for like work? Would they be like, do a British accent and you could, and or do an American and you could?
Yeah, I still do. I mean, I'm very grateful for it because when I went to like, they had to send me to a speech coach to like get a proper transatlantic accent. So
they're like,
I know.
Be a Valley girl, bitch. You're like, oh God. What?
Well, that's really hard for, believe it or not, that's more complicated. It took living in LA for years to be able to understand what that even was. Because I only moved to LA for the OC. So like, they were like, they would always be like, can you sound more like, you know, you're from the Valley or more Orange County? And I was like, I don't actually, like, I've never been to Orange County. I don't actually like know what that is.
You know what's weird though, listening to you talk, you're so right. You have this like eloquent, tiny twang underneath. And it is clearly from that like English background. So you got a great voice. Going back to the beginning, what were you like as a kid? This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Daddy Gang, it is so easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with more and more social events happening. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery and helps give you the tools you need to take care of yourself and recharge. Because a full battery is the key to a full life. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited for your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/daddy today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/daddy.
This episode is brought to you by Azo Vaginal Health Products. Most women will experience a yeast infection during their lifetime, but it is time to stop giving women's health the silent treatment. I think sometimes we get so anxious, we don't want to deal with it. Well, actually, yeast infections, you're like, I actually have to deal with this. I literally am so fucking itchy right now. That is what Azo products are for. They have an entire line of products designed to help balance your vaginal pH and protect your vaginal health. Azo Complete Feminine Balance helps restore the balance of good bacteria and for protection from yeast and urinary tract issues. Try Azo Dual Protection. Azo, care that goes there. Daddy Gang, you can save 20% with the promo code PODCAST at azoproducts.com. That's azoproducts.com.
This episode is brought to you by UGG. Who's ready to create some core memories this spring, Daddy Gang? Rally the squad. We're packing up and heading out on a road trip in UGG. Y'all know I live
in my UGG classic boots. Well, now it's time to swap out the boots for the sandal of the season, the Golden Glow, because you already know UGG season is year-round, baby. Shop the Golden Collection at UGG.com.
Going back to the beginning, what were you like as a kid?
I was pretty serious and very shy at first. So, like, I was, like, painfully shy and kind of awkward, I guess. Like, not very, but very serious.
When we think of actors and actresses, I feel like people that can't relate are always like, oh my gosh, they're, like, the most outgoing. And then I feel like every time I speak to an actor, they're like, no, I'm insecure. I was, like, trying to find my voice, so, like, acting helped. Like, how did you then find yourself, well, like, putting yourself in these situations?
I got into it by, I didn't want to do any of, like, the outdoor activities at camp, but so I wrote this, like, monologue, and then that was what you all had to perform something or show what you'd been doing all summer at camp. And so, like, my big sister had been, like, horseback riding and doing all this stuff, and I was just, like, sitting there writing. And I performed the monologue, and then, like, I guess someone's parent in the audience was an agent at a literary agency here in New York and was like, oh, well, she should definitely get into acting. And so, like, I tried it, and, yeah, the rest is history.
When I think about child actors, I always am like, okay, I can't imagine your social life in school, but was your experience like you were the cool kid in school, or were you getting bullied, or was you were just kind of like fitting in?
I was always a bit like on the outside. I only had like one best friend, and I was friends with a lot of the boys, but it was always like me and this girl, Laura Katzman, and like it was just the two of us, and we were kind of like outsiders, and like we were considered a bit like, you know, yeah, gothic, a bit weird, a bit like off the beaten. So we weren't popular, no.
Yeah.
That definitely wasn't the case. And I got teased once The Sixth Sense and stuff came out and the kids realized that I was like, you know, in movies. Then I got teased. And I did not want to be homeschooled. They tried and I fought that tooth and nail. I just acted up until they sent me back to school. I just didn't want to be stuck at home with my sister and like taken away from like that social, like it was so important to me to like have some semblance of a normal kind of, I enjoyed school. Like I really genuinely enjoyed learning and like I didn't want to become that like weirdo kid who was isolated, who had no like social kind of interaction.
Right. You're like, let me be like gothic with my one friend in the cafeteria, mom. Like, let me live.
Yeah,
okay. Like
that was important to me.
So after high school, you had plans to go to Yale.
There was an early acceptance to the drama program, which I wanted
Flex.
To do.
That's like a huge deal. And then you decided not to go.
I got cast in the OC when I was, you know, it was right at that kind of pivotal moment where it was going to like kind of, yeah, affect the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And I fought it originally. I didn't really want to do it, but I flew out and I kind of did an episode on another series, like a different series that McGee was doing. And basically everyone was like, you have to take this opportunity. You have to, because it's like, it's a big role and it's a life-changing thing.
Do you ever look back at that decision and, like, question, like, hmm?
I mean, yeah, but, like, I'm still like that. Like, I live near NYU. I, like, every day I walk by, I'm like, oh, I used to sit in the back of, like, some of my friends' lectures and classes that were going to Columbia and NYU and stuff, and I would just, like, I mean, I was obsessed with school culture and learning. I really enjoyed it.
I'm going to walk past NYU, like, tomorrow, and I'm like, is that Misha? You're, like, sitting in the classes.
Yeah, but I do. I find it fascinating. I mean, like, you know, my big sister, she's so smart. I mean, she studied law, politics, economics, mm-hmm. and like it was always like she went to the University of Edinburgh in the end, but like, yeah, I don't know, I was always very jealous of that, but yeah, it always kind of didn't sit well with me that I didn't get to do university, that I didn't get to go to college.
So we talk about the OC, we got to get into it. You mentioned you obviously took that instead of going to college. Obviously the OC was this phenomenon that I don't know if anyone expected it, but like it is still iconic to this day. People still talk about it. COVID, everyone's rewatching it. Like, new people are finding the show. I'm curious, like, did you have any idea that it was going to be as big as it was?
Not really, no. I think the first time that we realized was when we went to the first premiere episode of it. And like, we literally thought that that whole crowd was there for something else. And we were all like, I remember we were all riding in the same van together, and like, we looked over and we were like, what's that? And they were like, no, that's like the premiere for your show. That's where you're going.
You were obviously the youngest of everyone basically on that cast. You were 17 at the time, and everyone was in their 20s, 30s, 40s. What was the dynamic initially like with you and your castmates, you being 17?
Well, I think it was a bit tricky for everyone because, like, you know, just having, like, I was experiencing all of my firsts, and, like, I was so young, and, like, you know, my mom would be on set, and, yeah, I just needed a lot more, like, attention in that sense because I had my mom there and there was stuff going on and I was just finishing up school. And so, you know, they like, it was a lot of my firsts, let's put it like that. And mm-hmm. I that kind of really like separated me a little bit from them in the sense that like I wasn't out there living on my own in LA like yet, you know.
I didn't realize that the romantic partner that you had on your on-screen relationship with the character Ryan Atwood with Marissa, you being 17 at the time, I didn't realize he was 25. And so, like, again, as a 17-year-old playing across a 25-year-old, like, that's a pretty big age gap. How did you feel about that, like, romantic on-screen relationship?
Yeah, it wasn't just on-screen either. I mean, it was kind of complicated for me, because like I said, like I went into that like a virgin, like a kid, like really feeling like I needed to grow up quickly to portray, like, you know, acting with people older than me was a bit like, oh wow, like they know what they're doing, and like there's gonna be like relationships on this show and you're gonna need to like play that part. And I didn't feel really ready for that because I was always like a really late bloomer in school, and I hadn't really dated, and I just had like no idea what I was doing, really. So I felt like I needed to catch up, I think, a lot of the time.
So you had a relationship with your castmate?
Yeah. I mean, that was my first, like, and I had no idea like what I was doing, you know? And I think that kind of set things off on the wrong foot too, because it was like, you know, people hook up on these shows and whatever, and like these things happen, but it was, we threw ourselves all into it very fast. And like, then, you know, when you break up and like things don't work and they see you dating other people, and you know, like notoriously there was a lot of like interdating on that show and different people getting together. But it definitely was tricky that it happened like right out of the gate.
Yeah.
And that like I felt overwhelmed and not ready for any of that, and kind of like, you know, they were also like, I remember they were like, Misha's disappeared with Ben and like she's only 17 and a half, 18, like, and the producers like went to my parents and were like, you know, it was like a whole ordeal. And so like that's in the very beginning of the show before we're even like halfway through a season. So there was a lot going on there. That show, it just, so much happened in 3 seasons. It really feels like it was over the course of like 7 years or something, but it wasn't. It was like all crammed into this tiny little space.
I didn't understand how much, and I'm not saying this happened in your case, but like I didn't understand how much directors like are really like promoting, yes, like hang out together and be together, like it works for chemistry. But was that your case where they supported it?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of felt like a double-edged sword because, like, you know, exactly what you said, they're like, oh, we want it to seem like you guys are all friends and that you have chemistry and we need this to really work and make it look like you guys have this chemistry. And then you sort of get punished for it on the flip side, and they're like, oh, but not so much that it like affects our production or like what's going on here, and there's nothing you can really do about that because it's too late. Like, and you know, I feel like when I was that young, so like in first relationships, like you just kind of know what you don't want, you don't know what you do want, and so you kind of like panic and try to like, yeah. So it was definitely a tricky balance to strike.
How did you emotionally and mentally handle a dynamic where you still have to see someone every day and like be cordial, but
well, I mean, yeah, we just had to like suck it up and get on with it. And there was a lot of like jabs behind the scenes and off camera, and kind of like, you know, Yeah, I felt like that kind of ostracized me as well, because, like, you know, there was a marked difference in, like, maturity level there. And so, like, it was, I don't know what to say about it. We got through it. A lot of jokes, a lot of, like, you know, I really loved our crew, and I did feel that they were really there for us and that it was like a family. And that part was positive. And, like, I remember Rachel was saying to me recently, like, she looks back at the scene where we're all playing, like, chicken in the pool and stuff. And it's like, those were genuinely happy moments where we could forget about, like, all the pressure that was on us. And, like, and it was really hard because, you know, you would be out getting photographed with different people. And, like, I did start dating. And then, you know, you try not to bring that on set when people are, you know, you just try to let it go at the door kind of get on with it and keep working.
Did you end the relationship?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, like, one of those things, you're so young and you realize, like, I'm not ready for this. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah. Like, it's overwhelming.
Yeah. Overwhelming and just, like, too close to home. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't, it would be a very, very tricky thing to keep going on set. And I think, you know, Adam and Rachel, like, we all kind of experienced that in some form or another. But again, I just felt like not mature enough, like younger than them in that sense. I'd not dated before and I was not aware of, and I think he was, like, really angry with me to begin with, and, like, kind of, like, and I felt the punishment of that. Like, I felt that from the producers as well, that they were not happy about that. But, like, that's where there was such great chemistry between the characters, and I totally think, like, people did fall in love with them because there was, like, genuine friendship and love there on some level, you know.
Such a good point. Like, I remember when I had Rachel on my show and we talked about her and Adam, and, like, the chemistry between the cast, the core four, it was, like, overwhelming for people, and we romanticized it so much. And I could imagine, you're right, like, ending relationships like Adam and Rachel at one point, like, it was so heightened.
But that sexual tension was there.
Remains.
And it really, like, it reads, like, even when you're looking at the scenes on, like, the Ferris wheel and stuff, and, like, you know, I think we, like, kind of hated each other at that point. But, like, there was still this, there, like, intense kind of, like, tension there. And so it really worked for the show.
Can I ask if you lost your virginity when you were filming The O.C.? Is that kind of what
Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I was just such a, like, I had no idea about relationships at all or sex. Yeah. And so, like, it was kind of just, like, a whole learning curve for me.
You had mentioned there was bullying on set in, like, an interview. And I'm curious if, like, you can talk about that a little bit as, like, being in that position. Like, how do you deal with that?
There was just kind of, like, back talk between people, and, like, there was, it's, I think I heard you say this in one of your interviews, it's typical that in these sets where, like, everybody, that not everybody is going to get along. And even with, like, the secondary characters and, like, guest stars and people who came in, you know, there are going to be clashes. There are going to be people who are going to create rumors and make stuff up and, like, and, I think I was just very sensitive to that because I was so young, and, like, finding out that, like, maybe people were talking about you behind your back, was, I was particularly, like, sensitive to that. It felt like high school, but in the real world, and very elevated and very magnified.
Totally.
Yeah.
Marissa, the character you played, was, like, the it girl. Like, she's partying. She can get all the boys. She's got, like, the family drama. She's getting into trouble. I'm curious, like, did you relate to anything that she was going through?
I found those places in her, I guess. I mean, like, I started to more and more. I think that's why they wrote so much drama for her in there, like the relationship with her parents and stuff, because that was the stuff that I felt that, you know, emotional turmoil and angst in my life going on outside of the show. And so it was easier for me to play into that. And so I did start, you can't help but start to relate to your character when you're playing somebody day in and day out. There is this bizarre kind of, like, emergence of the two. And even, like, my social life outside of the show took on a very weird turn with me dating, like, you know, like, a typical, like, rich LA kid. And, like, some of that kind of, like, and because of the fame and the paparazzi and stuff, it kind of, like, all took on a weird turmoil around. So the character ended up like that's what we played up in her as well, because I really was going through a lot of growing pains and kind of coming into my own. And so the things I related to most was like her inner turmoil.
You leave at the end of season three. It still to this day is like one of, I feel like, the most heartbreaking moments on TV. Your character dies. How did you decide?
Spoiler alert.
Right. Oh, yeah. By the way, if you're watching on TikTok, turn this off. I'm like, so Marissa dies. How did you decide to leave the show? Was it your decision?
That's complicated. You know, things had not been going. Like, they really needed, like, a huge cliffhanger. Something had to give. Something had to change. And I'm, like, to be really honest, like, you know, I think as Josh and Stephanie were writing it, they knew they needed something huge. And the obvious thing was like, how much more can we really do with Marissa? Like, really, what more can she do? She's like experienced like with drugs, her sexuality, with like, and they'd written so many things and they were such quick succession of arcs, like that she was kind of like a character that was spiraling out of control. And at the same time in my life, like, you know, I was getting so much attention and there were other things going on, like people trying to write other roles for me, and I would not be released from the show. I could not go do anything else. So like, you know, even like Stan Lee was writing like a comic book character for me. Like there was no way that they were going to let me out to go do anything outside of the show, because that's just how it is. You're like, and so I think it was the obvious choice. Mm-hmm. The friction just between my team at the time and them, and like how I did seem to be the most alienated one and a bit a fish out of water. Like, I think that was like, it was an obvious choice. And we like, I don't know. I mean, Josh and Stephanie have their own ideas of how they ended it. And they say that they regret like a lot of like how it, they did handle it. But I thought it made the most sense for her to go out with a bang. She wasn't really a character that I thought, you know, should just like fade off into oblivion or like, you know, kind of ride off into the sunset. Like she had to go somewhere. And I felt like that was the right thing for her.
Do you remember the feeling of when the world saw that scene? Like, did you pay attention to how many people were so devastated? Were you overwhelmed?
It was crazy. I had people crying in airports to me. Like, people would come up to me on the street and be like, can I hug you? Like, I mean, people wanted to like physically touch me. They were just very like concerned about what had happened with the character.
Because they're like, you're alive.
It really upset people, and especially upset young girls, and rightfully so. I mean, it should. Like, you know, she had taken it too far, and like, but all the best characters do, and like all the best characters kind of like, you know, have some huge tragedy. Hers is a bit final, but
just a bit. When you went on the OC rewatch podcast with the girls, I remember watching you like, you looked upset when you were watching that final scene. You were like, oh my God.
Well, I haven't watched it maybe ever actually.
Is there like a reason?
Well, I never sat down and watched the show as it was airing. It was not something, so like a lot of it I hadn't seen. Mm-hmm. And that one in particular, I hadn't seen it since we shot it. And I forgot so much about it. Like the fact that there's no music there is really a choice, because the show was so music driven.
So good.
And that whole thing is just kind of like silent. And then, you know, the flames in the car, like I didn't remember it being quite that dramatic, the way the car is actually on fire and like,
oh girl, it was dramatic.
Yeah,
you had me in tears. And then Alleluia starts playing, and then you're like, but when you watched it and you were like, okay, let's turn this off, it's gonna get emotional, like what did it bring up for you seeing that scene? Because it felt like you were like upset.
We were upset on set that day. A lot of the crew were really sorry to see me go, and they were pretty upset. And it was a lot of goodbyes and, like, you know, putting on a brave face about the whole thing. But basically, like, I mean, I would always make light of everything. And we were like, more blood, more drama, like, you know. And but it was a sad time, because we were sorry to leave each other, you know.
Yeah.
They really were like a family to me. A lot of the guys and, you know, the heads of department on that show were really there for me through tough times, you know.
How would you describe that time of your life, like after the OC?
It was an intense time. It was because I think the thing that I hadn't really wrapped my head around was like the amount of worldwide fame that show actually got. And so there wasn't anywhere to really hide. And I think what overwhelmed me was like I was doing all these campaigns. And like there were times when I only had a few days off in the year. There was a lot of friction at home. There was like really no place for me to go that felt calm. And there was just a lot of pressure being put on me by people who expected the most out of me constantly. And so like I never really, like there were some years there where like there was only like maybe 2 days off in the year, like, and I didn't, so I, and like what really got me would be going to somewhere like Australia or the wherever you would think would be like the middle of nowhere to like, and then still having, you know, pictures surface of you, and like you, I just, it felt like I could never really get away from anything, and I had no privacy.
The paparazzi were absolutely obsessed with you. It was like insane. Can you talk about some of like the like details of like the way that they would try to get to you to like really embody what you were going through?
It was dangerous most of the time, and also just extremely invasive. I mean, the lengths that they would go to like tap phones and conversations and like find out where you were going and track your car and stuff. I mean, the lengths they went to were pretty absurd.
I like think I read somewhere you said something like they would like give homeless people phones.
No, they really did. They would give people like in the Malibu, like Country Mart and stuff, and people on Rodeo, they would give like random people like phones, and they would say like, if you ever see a celebrity show up, I'm the first person you should call. Like, I'll give you $50, $100, whatever it is, if you tip me off that you see like Misha or Nicole or any of these girls coming down here to like go shopping or go to lunch. That way they wouldn't have to like sit there all day and wait themselves in the car.
Lazy fucks. Like lazy piece of shit. Okay, you couldn't just wait there yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just insane. And you're right. Yeah. Like it was a different time. And I think maybe with social media now, like there's just more access, so it's less intense.
You can't get away with the same level of invasion of privacy. And you're right, like it's better. I think people have lived and learned, like the nice thing about social media is like, and the way it is now, you can give access to what you want to give access to.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you share more, then there's less of this kind of insane wall to try to get behind. So they're not literally scaling the walls to celebrities' homes anymore, because you're in there like posting about your life and you're sharing more about your personal life. And so it doesn't have that kind of intense, the stakes aren't so high.
You, I think, had said at one point you're, someone on your team around you started to give you like prescription drugs. When did that start happening, and like how did that happen?
It was happening even towards the end of the OC.
This episode is brought to you by UGG. Who's ready to create some core memories this spring, Daddy Gang? Rally the squad. We're packing up and heading out on a road trip in UGG. Y'all know I live in my UGG classic boots. Well, now it's time to swap out the boots for the sandal of the season, the Golden Glow, because you already know UGG season is year-round, baby. Shop the Golden Collection at UGG.com. This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Some things work so well. It's basically magic. Like my favorite highlighters that I'm like, wow, how did you all of a sudden make me look glowing? And you know what else really works, Daddy Gang? Shopify. It is a global commerce platform that helps you sell. I've seen a big difference in my online merch sales. They are especially good at turning browsers into buyers. I can see someone that's been on the site but didn't check out, or someone that checked out and then is revisiting the site. Like, if you want to grow your business, Daddy Gang, sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/unwell. Well, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/unwell.
someone on your team around you started to give you like prescription drugs. When did that start happening, and like how did that happen?
It was happening even towards the end of the OC. Like, it was put into the contract that I had to have a sober coach with me, and so then like I was being watched 24/7, but like it was still very popular in those days, like, to still be prescribing like Xanax and things for like, you know, like whatever, like if you were under a lot of duress or stress, they'd be like, this is what you need to do to like kind of get through it. And it was just being constantly told what to do by people every second and micromanaged in every single way. And I think that just became, it did become overwhelming for me. And it wasn't like there never really was a proper break. There was never really a moment. And like, I remember coming back home, like they were very concerned. Like I walked into my house and there was like, you know, like 10 guys in suits all sitting around like talking to me. I was like, what is this? And they were like, well, you have to go do a project in like 2 weeks. Like, are you going to be ready? So it just kind of all started compounding.
Like, you're saying the men in suits were there to like,
it was just people from like all over, like the agency, like producers, like people really wanted to know that I was going to be performing and doing like right. The schedule that they expected me to stick to. And like, I mean, I don't think that would even like, I don't think you could really do that with actors now. Like now, if you say to somebody like I'm not doing well, or like there are like trigger words that you right. can like, where they're like, okay, well, we have to leave this person alone. Like, she needs like a few days off, or she needs some time to herself. Like, that wasn't the case then. And I've listened to other actors talk about that too, where they were kind of like, I mean, it's a big deal when you're helming a whole show and everybody's jobs are relying on you and situations like that. So
that's an interesting point, like mental health wise, like no one was having conversations the way that they were now. So like, cause all I'm thinking about is anyone like asking you like, Misha, are you okay? Like, do you need a break? Mm. And instead everyone's like, how are we going to get you out the door the next day? Like, take this pill. Like, everybody's here. Like, we need to, you're making us all money, so let's go out the door. That's a lot of responsibility and a lot of weight to put on a young girl that's been doing this for so long. Like the beginning of this interview, I'm like, you're 10 when you get your first movie. Your mom, your relationship with your mother, at one point you did fire her as your manager. Like, what was the dynamic that led to that, and then how did you get back to a relationship?
It just wasn't healthy. And I mean, it's still like, you know, I've just in my life, I've really learned to prioritize like my chosen family and like the people who have really actually been there for me. I don't rely on like any one particular family member anymore. Like, I've learned that for my own happiness, and like those relationships, I think in life, to be honest, are the most toxic, because you feel like you can say or do whatever you want to somebody because you're related. And I've found that those have been the hardest for me to really understand. So, I mean, I'm completely independent now and I do everything for me. And, you know, like, it's led to my like sobriety and happiness. And like, I've had to watch other people crumble, and it's been hard to watch. But like, you know, I'm just grateful that I've been able to kind of find the people in my life who have been there for me consistently and consistently shown up for me. And so like, that's led to where I am now, which is like healthy and sober and happy. And like, you know, but unfortunately, I've had to lose a lot of family members along the way. And so, like, you know, there are people in this industry who understand that. There are a lot of people. It's unfortunate, but it's sometimes like the reality of the world is that.
I think it's a good point, though. And I think I've talked about that on my show before. Like, family, the word family is so just by the way that you define it. Like, it doesn't have to be blood, and you can make your own family, and like the family that you're born into, it doesn't mean anything. It's like, if you're not getting treated correctly, like, then you need to adjust your relationships and you need to reevaluate. And just because it's blood doesn't mean like you have to stay, and you have to, of course, we're going to fight for things to a certain degree, but when it's so unhealthy, seeing things online of like potentially family members like stealing money from you, like, how do you get to a place where you can like be in relationships moving forward and like trust people from previous things that have been like so heartbreaking and happening to you?
Yeah, there has been a lot of heartbreak. I think that like for me, the thing that's is like I have to like really concentrate on myself, because it sounds cliche, but like, you know, unless you love yourself and love you and like can spend the time with you, you're the person you have to answer to, you know, and like nobody else. And I've had other people, I've been, yeah, stolen from and lied to in so many different ways over the course of, you know, the last 10, 15 years especially. And like, it's only in the last like 2-3 years even maybe that I feel like I have really taken responsibility for it and for myself, and like been like, you know what, the only thing that I can do is just be happy, healthy, and sober and working out, and like that's the only thing that's really gonna like make my life worth living. Because I had given up for a while there, like I was very, I just felt so, I don't know, it makes me emotional because I felt really alone. Yeah, so, I mean, it really has been just like cutting people out of my life, truly.
Thank you for sharing that, because I can imagine it's so hard when I'm like, you're talking about your family and you're talking about literally getting stolen from. You're like, how do you, like, that's something that is like, you couldn't feel more, how could you feel not alone? Like the people that you usually would turn to be like.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, I have to believe that in life, everybody does things thinking they're doing it for the right reason, yeah, and maybe like with good intentions. Yeah. But sometimes like there isn't always good intentions. And sometimes you can't really explain why people do what they do. And yeah, it's a tricky one. And I think, you know, in family especially, it's a tricky one. And you can just like minimize your contact with those kinds of people, and moving forward, be careful about, because I can tend to be a very open and trusting and kind of naive person for a long time there. And I, you know, I had it happen kind of repeatedly to me in both like relationships as well, people using me. And so I realized that, yeah, I don't know. I mean, like maybe I wasn't the best judge of character for a while there, and to stop making excuses for other people, because I think for a long time I was making excuses because you don't want to believe that somebody would, like, you know.
Of course. I'm curious, Misha, like when you were alone in those moments, like how did you keep going? Because I'm trying to put myself in your shoes of like knowing the closest people to you are kind of like just completely abandoning you. There's no trust. You're getting stolen from. Like, how did you keep even going?
I mean, a lot of therapy, yeah, and a lot of, yeah, just like cutting people out and working on myself. And like strength comes at the darkest times, yeah, you know? I mean, I've found my strength. And when I was younger, like, I thought I was going to, like, be dead by 27. I was going to be part of that 27 club. It was like, live young and fast and die. Like, you know, I was like, I really didn't give a shit. I was reckless. I was over it. I didn't really, you know, want to be doing stuff for other people anymore. I didn't want to be, like, you know, the person that everybody needed to be making the money and doing the this and the that. And then, like, you know, I think when I got to my 30s and I was like, shit, I'm still here. I'm still going, and I'm stronger than I was then, you know, and I've been through so much, and these experiences haven't killed me, and they've made me so much stronger. And I've been to court. I've fought for my rights. I've fought for my freedoms. And I've, you know, like when you get past that and out on the other side, then your whole perspective on life and everything changes, because you're like, I am strong.
Right.
I'm strong. Here. And I used to get so upset with people because they'd be like, you're the strongest person I know. And that really felt like an insult after a while, because it just felt like, well, why do all these things keep happening to me? But it's true. I mean, you really do, when the chips are down, find that strength, mm-hmm, in yourself, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm so sorry, because I can't imagine like being at a place where you are almost like aware that the end could be near for yourself because of what's happening in your life. Like,
Well, I romanticized all of that kind of like rock and roll, just like, you know, I was just like, I had kind of made up my mind that it wasn't gonna like, yeah, that there was no real kind of longevity in it for me, that I just didn't want to, I didn't care to like keep going. And then, yeah, like I said, I think just, I can't stand injustices in life, and like, mm-hmm. I really can't stand when people do take advantage of people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the strength that's really came from, is just like, you know what, like, I'm not going to take this, and like, yeah, fuck that. Like, I'm not going to sit by and watch these people do that.
Talking about that time in your life where like, it was kind of like, I was romanticizing it. It was like, fuck this. Like, so in 2007, you were arrested for a DUI, and a few years later, you were held in a psychiatric hospital. Behind closed doors, like, what was happening with you at that point?
Well, the DUI, I mean, I don't really know what to say about that. That was just, it was what it was. It was just like, it was a straight up, like, we were out one night, and yeah, that was, it was stupid. Got a DUI. The psychiatric stuff, like, that was just like having a full-blown breakdown. And like, I mean, that time it was really, I was drugged. Somebody had slipped me roofies, and it was GHB, and I'm lucky to be alive. Like, I mean, I just happened to be like, I overdosed. And so there was so many things that other people did to me that felt like so aggressively like wrong. And, you know, I don't think that I realized how dangerous that seedy side of LA can be. And like, I had been kind of really protected and sheltered for a long time. And when I kind of got out there in the like, you know, and I was like, I want to live my life. I want to be a normal person, whatever that means. And like, go to these parties, go do this stuff. And then it's like, you know, you end up in a situation like that. It's so, yeah, I mean, you really do. You live and you learn. And I just had a full-blown breakdown from that.
When I heard you say, like, it was so annoying hearing people say, like, you're so strong, you're so strong. You're like, but why does this all have to keep fucking happening to me?
It was just hard, people saying that. I mean, like, you know, even, like, my boyfriends and all my friends around me would constantly say that. But I didn't feel as strong as I think I was coming across, you know. Mm-hmm. I do have this like kind of like British thing of like, suck it up, just move on, like kind of don't show your feelings, like just kind of try to keep like a good exterior to you. You know, it's only in the last few years that I really feel that, like from the inside out. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, I didn't really feel that strength to the degree that I do now.
I was thinking about like of all the, when you're saying, you know, like people basically taking advantage of you. In 2017, one of your ex-boyfriends you found out had filmed you when you were having sex and was going and trying to shop the sex tape.
Yeah.
Can you take me back to the moment where you realized that even like existed and what you were going through?
It was a disaster. It was an absolute fucking nightmare. But I mean, yeah, I don't like to go back there, but I will tell you, I mean, it was... shady. Don't, boys who live together in a house, probably red flag. Too many computers, red flag. Stop. I mean, like, the whole thing was just like, in hindsight, red flags everywhere. But like, I mean, in the bathroom, in the living room, like the whole like just constant. So yeah, it was bad.
You had no idea?
No idea. Absolutely no idea. Somebody actually showed it to me, and I was like, one of his friends came to me and warned me, and I didn't think it was possible that some of that was real. And it was. I mean, and apparently he was even caught saying to somebody, like, he knew that Kim Kardashian and Paris Hilton and all these people had had sex tapes, and that like I was one of the only girls who wouldn't like, and I mean, if you know me, I'm very private and really prudish when it comes to like sexual relationships and what I share. And so that was just like, I mean, I thought my world was ending. It was literally like the worst thing that anybody could do to me. I mean, forget all the like other things that people have done to me. That for me was like, no, I cannot go on if this person manages to do this to me. And so, like, I was at a friend's house in the Hollywood Hills, I remember, and she woke me up and she was like, oh my God, there's a rumor going around that that there is, like, footage. And I was like, of what? Like, what can it possibly be? That was a whole crazy experience. I became my own detective, and I went and went to the LAPD, and I was constantly contacting, like, the sex crimes. Like, I did my own surveillance of him and his friends, found him, like, yeah. So I had to turn into, like, a full-blown vigilante there for a minute.
And did you...
I'm glad I did.
Abso-fucking-lutely. When you found also out, like, did you have a conversation with him? Did you not speak to him again?
God, no. No. I mean, like, he disappeared. He upped and, like, I mean, it was already over. It was just a 2-week thing. And it was, so he'd already gotten what he wanted. He was long gone. I had to, like, track him and his friends down. And I mean, yeah, it was like a nightmare. Going into court, getting all these restraining orders, constantly showing up. For over a year, like a year and a half, over a long period of time. And if I hadn't had the support I'd had from lawyers and from other women who were more aware of it, and there was no real laws at the time. Like, the LAPD mm-hmm. were like, oh, we deal with stuff like, yeah, we know this stuff goes on. But I'll never forget walking into the police station and, like, giving them the address of the house where I thought most of it happened, and they brought it up on the, and the cop turns the computer around and he goes, is that him? And he was actually there on Google Maps in front of the apartment building with his dog. And I was like, I mean, like, oh, when I say the detective in me, like, came out, you have no idea.
You're like, let's go get this motherfucker.
You have no idea.
Wait, so did you date this guy for 2 weeks?
Yeah, it was just like a 2-week fling.
Misha.
It's shocking what goes through people's minds, like, where they see opportunity, isn't it?
It's just so sick how it happens. Any woman listening, like, if they're going through this, like, no. It is not your fault.
No.
It is illegal and it's a crime. I'm curious, when of everything, like, that's just you've been through in your life, are you resentful at all?
No. I mean, there are people that I look back on and I'm like, you know, I've definitely can't stand them. I'm glad that they're not in my life anymore. And I blame them for some of the things that kind of went on around that time period. But no, I mean, I don't think you can be resentful in life. I think I still have, I like to think, like, a great sense of humor about things, and like to be, I keep things very lighthearted, and I keep my chosen family very close. And the family that I do choose to speak to very close. And, like, you can't be resentful in life. You may as, it's all over if you're going to get like that. You know, you may as well be dead. Like, what's the point?
Right.
You can't sit around and hate people for the things that happen. You have to learn and grow and mature from those situations and, like, evolve, you know? I mean,
totally.
Life is one big, like, learning curve and story. And so, like, you know, you just, all you can do is, like, learn and grow. And I'm actually very grateful for that, you know?
Yeah.
In the bigger picture, like, it's made me... It's definitely made me who I am today.
If you could say something to yourself when you were at that point where you had the mentality of, like, fuck it, I'll be in the 27 club, like, what do you wish you could say to Misha now?
You're going to be here 10 years later sitting on a couch talking to Alex Cooper about it. So get your shit together now.
That you're going to be alive and thriving and happy and healthy, and it's all going to come together.
Because you don't see it at the time when you're in it. You just feel so overwhelmed, you know. And depression is real. And it takes, like, a while for, like, the serotonin and the, like, happiness to, like, level out and for you to come back from these situations. And it's not, like, an overnight, like... But then, like, strangely, one day it will be kind of like... A switch gets flicked.
Isn't
and you
so
feel
weird?
It is weird.
It's like you look back when you're talking about it. Like, I have moments in my life too where I was, like, going through something or whatever, and then one day you're just, like, making coffee or you're and you're like, oh my God, it all,
I'm not, like, that person at all anymore. I don't know, because when I was in it, I didn't see, like, I couldn't barely even see a pinpoint of a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yep.
And now here I am, and it's like, Thank God. I'm not even in the tunnel.
You're not. Bitch, the tunnel's nowhere to be found, okay? It's gone. It's so gone. It's gone. Are you dating? Are you in a relationship? Are you single?
This episode is brought to you by Rakuten. If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Samsung, Expedia, and Sephora. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Are you dating? Are you in a relationship? Are you single? What are we doing?
No, I'm single at the moment, and I love it.
Oh, my God.
I love it. I really, truly have just been working on myself, and I fucking love it. It's great. I mean, I don't have to answer to anyone. I just, like, I feel very, like, you know, like, happy and sober and, like, clear, and, like, I can be healthy, and because I will fall into, like, it'll all happen when I fall in love again. Like, I fall hard and fast, and then I'm, like, you know, kind of almost codependent with that person. So I hope, like, moving forward, if I want anything from my relationships, it's that they aren't so intense. And
I do feel like what I've learned, though, is, like, that's also just, we're talking about all these different stages of your life. And something I learned about myself is, like, I had a similar experience. Like, I was like, God, these relationships are so heavy and so intense. And then the more I worked on myself and the more that I became the best version of myself, and it sounds like you're just in this place of, like, clarity and you're, like, Pilates and yoga and sobriety, bitch. Like, you
don't
fully
give off
on
those
yourself.
Vibes. Guys don't feel like they can control you like that.
Completely.
Yeah, exactly. Because you are, without even knowing it, you are giving off vibes that you need to be babied or you need to be taken care of in some way, I think. And, like,
totally.
Even though you feel like you're acting so independent, but, like, yeah,
it's different. Like, you will attract someone completely different in this new stage of your life just because you also see yourself differently. I mean, even think about what you were feeling about yourself before 27, and then now you're like, oh my God, these are different people. Like,
I mean, yeah, that person never would have considered settling down, never would have considered marriage, kids, anything. Like, none of that would have even been like, I'd have been like, oh, hell no. But, you know, yeah, things change.
So you said you kind of would consider yourself, like, are you a romantic? Yeah, Valentine's Day. Misha brought me literally a nice little teddy bear and a little rose.
Well, you're engaged. And I was like, oh, you have to spend Valentine's. And I hate that word, Galentine's, but I was like, okay, so, no, it's such an annoying word, isn't it? But anyway, I was like, if we're doing Valentine's Day, you need a teddy bear and a
Let me be so clear. I cannot explain to you how happy I am that I'm spending Valentine's Day with you. Like, truly, this episode, I already know, is one, going to help so many women, and two, like, we're Misha fans over here, okay? We fucking love you. If you do start dating again, what is your approach to dating and what are you looking for?
Oh, man, I don't know. Like, I think I, again, with that, I went through phases where, like, I really wanted to date musicians and, like, be on tour and, like, you know, like,
Misha.
Yeah, exactly. Like, those days are over. That's not attractive to me anymore. I don't want to be with, like, the guy in a band, and I don't, like, you know. I mean, never say never, but it's not really my thing. And I've kind of, you know, I've moved on from all of that stuff, and I've matured. And
so you had a type.
I mean, I did date a lot of, like, kind of band guys. I don't think I have a type per se, but...
What was it about the band guy that you were loving? Like, what was going on?
I don't know. I was just young and thought that was cool to be on tour with, like, the Cold War Kids or Rooney and stuff. Like, you know, like, I thought I was, like, having a blast. I was in my 20s. I don't know.
Like, it was fun. Wait, I forgot. And Rooney was on the show.
Mm-hmm. We had so many cool bands on the show. It was a great way to meet people.
The music was everything. Yeah. Okay, so you liked the band boys, but now maybe we're, like, veering away.
Yes. No, we have veered away. I like people who are driven and have their own stuff going on. It's incredibly important considering how, like, independent and driven I've always had to be in my life and am in my life. Like, yeah. I need that and a sense of humor are the two main things.
What is a non-negotiable for you?
Like, if you don't have a sense of humor and you can't make me laugh, like, if you're not funny, then it's like, no, that's not going to work, probably.
Right, like, I need to be cracking up.
Yeah, I need somebody who feels like a best friend.
Mm-hmm. So, because I think also, if you could talk about, because I, as we wind down, like, I have a lot of, I just sounded like my fucking therapist. You guys, my therapist at, like, the 50-minute mark is like, as we wind down, I'm like, oh, bitch, that's your way of telling me, like, it's over. Like, you're going to hang up on me.
Panic.
But as we wind down, I'm curious, like, of all the themes we did talk about with men, like, how have you, whether it's in therapy or just on your own journey, like, how have you tried to rebuild trust? Because I feel like there's so many women that write into me of, like, I just feel like I've been so fucking wronged by men, and sorry to all the men in the room, but, like, it's hard to not hate them because of the bad interactions you've had with them. Like, do you have any advice for women that have gone through?
I've definitely become more of a girl's girl over the years, that's for sure. But... what, in relationships, like, yeah, how, like, to, like, how not get again? Yeah, I mean, you have to, you just have to, I mean, you just have to keep your wits about you, but, like, you can't go around with, like we said, like, resenting or having a chip on your shoulder and being like that, because also you won't attract, like, the right people in that phase either. So
that's a good point.
I love love. I think, you know, everybody needs to keep an open mind. So there are good people out there, even though this episode addressed, like, a lot of
you all suck,
a lot of you not so good people, but
no, there are, you're right. And it's like, I think it's important to have conversations with, like, this of, like, the bad can be really fucking bad and really fucking dark, but if you keep pushing through it, like you said, like, you wish you could tell yourself then, like, no, bitch, you are gonna make it past 27 and it is going to get better, and you are so strong, but you shouldn't have had to be that strong. But the reason you're still here is because you're so strong. And, like, keep fighting, to people listening that are going through it. Like, there's a reason to keep fighting, because it actually, most of the time, always does get fucking better.
It does.
What do you think is the biggest misconception about you?
Ooh, I don't know. I think, like, honestly, a lot of people think that I am Marissa Cooper. Like, I think a lot of people think I'm going to be a really stuck-up bitch. Like, I do. I get that vibe, like, that people think, like, oh, I've dated these guys and that, like, I'm going to be... I do think that that's a horrible, like, it kind of comes with the territory of when people meet me. They're always like, oh, you're so much prettier in person and you're so much nicer than I thought you were going to be. And I'm like, wow, okay. I don't think I want to know what you thought. But, like, I think that seems to have been, like, the lasting stigma around things. I think it's the whole thing we were talking about of, like, you know, like, the storylines of Marissa and, like, Misha at the time kind of crossing, and people just, like, equating the two with each other. I think that's been kind of a toxic kind of lasting, like, that some people have stuck in their heads.
Yeah. Does that make you at all, like, resent the character?
No, I still love Marissa as a character. I think she's a badass bitch, and I think, like, she was a great character. I just think, you know, like, people are not the roles they play, and, like, actors are, like, you know,
yes.
Give actors
are not
break.
The roles they play, period. God bless. Everyone online, you get that? TikTok? Okay. What do you hope people take away from this interview?
Hopefully, like, for me, girl strength and power, because I think talking about these things and, like, you know, if you can talk about your dark times and your depression or anything that you've been through, and, like, for me, like I said, I was walking around the city with my headphones and listening to your interviews, and I do find them really interesting, and I think it's important that you can listen to other women's perspectives and what they've been through. And if you're having a bad day, it's probably, hopefully it's not as bad as Misha's first day.
You're like, bitch, hopefully this really brings mood up.
This will brighten you.
But you're right. It's like sometimes when you're really, everyone goes through it where you're feeling so alone. And there is something really nice when, especially people you look up to that you know online, are like, oh, I have been through it. It can give that person sitting in their room, whether it's a good or bad day, to be like, damn, I'm so not alone. It's all the same themes. We all have ties to each other. It's just we experience it or feel it differently. But no, I really appreciate you opening up today because I know you don't do a lot of this kind of stuff.
No.
But I think in the right environment, like it was such a
powerful...
Well,
I wanted to talk to you because I think you're cool. I get good vibes from you. And when I first spoke to you, I was like, out of everybody that I could talk to, like, yeah, it's true. I turned down all the podcasts and stuff, but it's been fun talking to you.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Mm. Last question.
Yes.
What can fans expect from you next? What are you up to in your life? Just like give us the tea.
Ooh, you know what's fun is, well, I was working quite a bit last year, which was fun. And so I was traveling a lot. And then, so I was working in Australia, and now I think I'm going to be doing a rom-com later this year in Australia, which is a really new territory for me. So she's a really fun character. Yeah, I know. It's not the kind of role, but she's got this kind of like a great sense of humor to her, the character and stuff. And I just think it's such a beautiful backdrop to film in. And I feel this
I'm
character.
Freaking out.
So
I'm freaking out.
That. And I did a little movie in Ireland last year, which was really fun for me because I got to be back near my Irish roots.
So
and
fun.
Yeah, just...
You in a rom-com?
I know.
Misha, I'm like, I'm already gagged.
I love this one because it's like a modern day, like real take on, you know, she's got a great sense of humor and she's really grounded and like the supporting, like he's got a brother in it and she's got her sister. So those dynamics also come into play a lot. So I think it's a great script. And yeah.
Let me just say this. The Daddy Gang, my fans and I will be sat ready to watch with our popcorn, ready to support
They're
our girl.
They're coming back, too. Like, I mean, it's a fun genre. We don't always want to be in, like, you know, running scared and doing these dramatic roles. Like,
right, in, like, our emo days. Like, sometimes we want a, like, little laugh with our popcorn. Misha, I cannot thank you enough for coming on, for trusting me with this conversation. And, like, truly, it has been such a pleasure to get to know you more. And I feel like, I mean, I know there's so much more to you, but I appreciate you sitting down with me because this was really one of my faves. So thank you. And thank you for coming and taking time out of your busy life.
No, thanks. I'm glad we got to meet up here in New York.
Woo!
This episode is brought to you by DoorDash. Want $0 delivery fees? Try Dash Pass by DoorDash. Daddy gang, I love being home. I love to be cozy, comfortable, laying on the couch. I can't tell you how many times I need something, but I am too lazy to get up and get out of the house. And sometimes I need food or groceries, you name it. Dash Pass gets it delivered right to my door and yours too. It is only $9.99 a month, so I think it's a really good deal, Daddy Gang. So get $0 delivery fees on eligible orders with Dash Pass, and new members get a 30-day free trial. Terms apply. Sign up today. This episode is brought to you by UGG. Who's ready to create some core memories this spring, Daddy Gang? Rally the squad. We're packing up and heading out on a road trip in UGG. Y'all know I live in my UGG classic boots. Well, now it's time to swap out the boots for the sandal of the season, the Golden Glow, because you already know UGG season is year-round, baby. Shop the Golden Collection at UGG.com.